There's this saying about Dominicans that is particularly appropriate. It's not complicated, and it cuts right to the point. And it goes like this. Whenever two Dominicans gather, there are at least three opinions. And I must confess that this is pretty accurate. We Dominicans know about distinctions. So when you approach Father David, Father Jerome, or myself with what seems to be a very clear-cut question, be prepared for an answer like, well, it depends. And that's good, because inasmuch as we would like to live in a black and white world, we really don't. In today's reading, Jesus went into the synagogue and taught, but he didn't just teach. He, according to St. Mark, taught as one having authority. Now, people will read this particular phrase and be perplexed because it can be interpreted in several ways. Some might read into the words as one having authority to mean as one, but not really having. But this text is meant to criticize the scribes who were just that. Some might think that the word authority is more a synonym or equated with competence or confidence. The term does indeed have an element of confidence, but it's more than that. You can be confident in an authoritative way, but this doesn't necessarily mean that you're authoritative. It's just a manner of authority. No, in this case, the word must be interpreted as with authority, meaning that Jesus did not just think that he had the authority. He had the authority, and he was teaching the actual truth. So why am I focusing on the meaning of the text here? Well, because if Jesus did not teach the truth of God, then what was his purpose? He was not just a figure, a celebrity of the first century who was looking for personal gain. We know that because of his incredible sacrifice at Calvary. No, it is important to understand that the truth that he revealed had substance, and it was the mind and intention of God for us, his children. Yet it is this truth that has endured for millennia. And it's as fresh today as it was 2,000 years ago. But this isn't exactly how the church is portrayed in the modern world. Today it is popular for us to have a mindset that the church is behind the times. It is living in a world of centuries gone by. Isn't it time that the church modify its stance on social issues? We live in a different age. You heard these before, of course. And it is true that we do live in a different age. But it's also true that people are people. And the only defining distinction that we can think of is perhaps technology. We can presumably do things more efficiently and more quickly. Yet, we still celebrate our successes, the important milestones in our lives, such as the birth of our children or the passing of the elder generation. But we also share the same marks of original sin that came from our ancestors. We get jealous. We get envious, we get angry, we get petty. We often put people down and we still oppress each other at all levels. And if there's anything new, it's that perhaps we've become a little bit more material than ever before. And we all know what Jesus said about latching onto things of this world. Now, Father Jerome 2 weeks ago gave a wonderful, compassionate explanation of why we should not and why we really need not go the route of abortion including those cases of violence. The responses from you, the congregation, was nothing short of incredible. Nobody had explained it to me like that before. And that was extremely thoughtful and compassionate. These were a couple of the comments he received. And believe it or not, the church has had 2,000 years to develop and process the good and evil aspects of this very issue. And it has remained unwavering in its insistence that the dignity of life be preserved and respected. This isn't a popular position, but it is what Jesus taught. But life issues are not all about abortion, although it seems to get a lot of attention these days. Now let's move to euthanasia. What exactly is it? What does it mean? And what does the church say about it? Well, the most secular definitions start with mercy killing. People euthanize in order to end what they would term suffering. And they end this suffering through an extraordinary method, usually by introducing a drug to the individual in question. The result, of course, is death. The church, from the very beginning, has viewed extraordinary measures to take any human life as bad and something against nature and against God's plan for humanity. Now, you're all probably thinking about this particular instance in this context of a suffering person in a hospital bed. But the church's definition is much more broad than that. For instance, it also considers aiming a gun at a person point blank and firing it as an extraordinary method, and it usually results in death. Now, nobody would argue that this is wrong. So you see, the church's position is really one of preserving life because, let's face it, killing people falls right under the commandment of thou shalt not kill from the Old Testament and love your neighbor as yourself from the New Testament. But you might chime up and say, does this mean that then we must take any and all measures to preserve life, no matter the cost, no matter the suffering, no matter the pain? It is true that we are obliged to preserve life. This is what the church asks us to do. And in fact, we are to take measures to help our neighbor when they are down and out. Almsgiving and service to the poor are such actions that we should take. But in the specifics of a hospital or bedridden environment, the church asks us only to take ordinary means to preserve life. Extraordinary means, there's that word again, is not necessary, nor is it obligatory. So what in the world is the difference between ordinary and extraordinary? An ordinary treatment is a procedure that provides some benefit to the patient without excessive burden or hardship. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, Father Corwin, you're just defining terms with other ambiguous terms. And it's sort of true because you're looking for a black and white answer to a question that does not have black and white answers. Ultimately, you want to say something that does this or that, or not to do this and not to do that. That would be the easy route. But let me give you an example and see if that helps. We would say that providing food and water is an ordinary means to sustain life, right? Our human bodies require nourishment. Otherwise, they fail. Strip those away, and I think that the consensus is that we as adults could survive without water for about a week, and without food for about 3 weeks. Now, everyone's metabolism is slightly different, so results will vary, but let's not experiment. Now, let's talk about an infant that was for adults. You see that the ordinary means is drastically different. For one thing, an infant cannot feed him or herself. So ordinary means would include the process of not just providing food and water, but also their dispensing. You know, we're obligated to feed them. You see, ordinary means changes from individual to individual. On the other hand, extraordinary measures, of course, are not ordinary, and these measures the church does not force you to use. The church will not object to them being used, and in fact, the sustaining of life by these means are viewed as good. Okay, so you're probably thinking, uh-oh, there he goes again, using more ambiguous terms. So let me give you an example. Believe it or not, surgery and medicine are extraordinary measures. There are cases where a doctor will state that surgery is the only way that a patient can survive a certain condition. The church does not mandate, obligate, or even coerce an individual from going through surgery. This decision is left entirely up to the patient, their families, and their doctors, who are, in this case, the competent authorities. Does this sound like the evil church that is forcing people into making decisions to extend life, no matter what? No, it's far from it. See, the church is quite logical in this. Now, right now, there's a bill in the California State Senate over what people are calling the right to die. And for all intents and purposes, it is being cast as a bill that would help end someone's suffering. Who would be against that? I'm all for not suffering. I get a paper cut and I start to moan and complain. Naturally, I don't want to trivialize someone's pain or sorrow. However, the Lord does not waste these things on people. Far from it. In my hospital ministry, I've seen families come together in ways they never would before. I've seen people begin and complete their grieving through an ordeal from suffering and dying, something that all psychologists endorse. And I've seen even the most selfish people become caring, heroic caregivers, exactly what would send them right to heaven. Be not afraid. Jesus is with you always. Courage and take heart in the Lord, for he loves you and wants the very best for you.